The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
It is the Ain't No Fang Podcast here at ArizonaSports.com and on the Arizona Sports app. I'm Steve Zinsmeister with Cody Fincher, and Derek Montilla joins us. He is outside the studio. We are in the studio this morning. Derek, thanks so much for taking the time to connect with us.
Thank you for not allowing me to come into the studio, Steve. I know that it was based purely on the fact that you guys can no longer really know where I've been when I'm not there with you.
It was not my choice. I am also not complaining. But what we can complain plenty about is Diamondbacks baseball, because that is what we talk about here. And it might not be for much longer if they continue to play the way they have. We are a week into the season, and not only are things going awry around the league with the coronavirus, including the Miami Marlins have 19 people, is the last check that I saw.
Shut it all down.
Yeah, well, we could shut the Marlins down, and I think we could all be pretty happy with that. But with the Diamondbacks currently sitting at 2-5, and I don't even know if they deserve the two wins, what is most concerning, Derek, when you look at this team that has just so many things going wrong all at the same time?
I don't even know where to start, Steve. I would say that offensively they've been flat, right? They haven't had a chance to really get on a roll. Even in a couple of the games where they scored a lot of runs, it didn't really seem like it was consistent offense scattered throughout the game. Maybe the one win in Texas was a little bit like that. I just feel like offensively they're MIA. Their starting pitching has been horrendous. And it's the guys that I thought we would count on this season. I right now see a lot of potential in Merrill Kelly being our number one guy at this point with the way things are going for both Robbie Ray and Madison Bumgarner. It's unfortunate. And I will say unexpected doesn't even begin to describe it for me. Yet somehow also expected. Like, I gave them this ridiculous expectations when we did our predictions, and I did it just kind of to be fun. And I didn't think that a week into it, I would have like trouble sleeping at night with the fact that I thought I could jokingly, but still encouragingly say that the Diamondbacks could win the NL West. I don't even see them winning one of the 16 playoff positions at this point, at the way they're playing. So I don't know who this team is. I still think the young guys on this team are delivering and they're doing, you know, exactly what they did last season. But again, it's the guys I thought we would be able to count on specifically.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Derek there. I don't even know if I can say I'm more concerned about the pitching or the offense at this point, because they've both been so bad. Just, you know, focusing on a couple guys. Robbie Ray has been terrible. Watching the game last night, he walked the first batter of the game. He walked Mookie Betts, and I knew right then, he doesn't have it. He was not commanding his fastball at all. He was missing up and out of the zone like the old Robbie Ray, no matter what his pitching delivery looks like. And then there was a point in the second inning. I don't know who singled, but one Dodger player hit a single, and they showed Robbie Ray getting the ball back from the outfield. And the look on his face, if I had been Torrey Lovello and seen and somehow been like in front of a TV monitor and seen the look on his face, I would have pulled him right then. Because
gone.
Because looking at that guy on the mound in the second inning, he doesn't have it. He didn't know how to get these guys out. And
he's not the only one. I mean, I feel like all seven games that the pitchers have been behind 1-0 every single at bat. I feel like they have been behind in the count the entire season. Every inning, there's no playing to contact. There's no confidence in their ability to get outs without trying to get a guy to like strike out. Yet they're not very good at striking people out. It's odd to have that much faith in trying to dance around the strike zone and do things like that.
Yeah.
When, you know, you should be able to put a ball up there that you're pretty confident that even though the hitter's going to hit, it's going to result in a ground ball. You know, we don't seem to have that guy. Andrew Chafin used to be pretty consistent at that. And he is. I mean, another one of these guys, like I don't even know where to start with someone who I thought was going to be the consistent part of the bullpen. And every time you start to feel like happy for someone or feel like someone's giving you something to get excited about, it seems to turn pretty quick. Luke Weaver, yep. Hector Rendon, like every time it seemed like there was something that was like cooking for a minute with the pitchers, and then something would just go completely off the rails the next inning or the next batter.
Yeah, the only pitcher that's actually done his job has been Merrill Kelly, who took a no-hitter into the seventh inning and looked great. And he pitched eight innings that game or seven and a third, something like that. And the D-backs got a win. And then just going back to the offense, I don't understand how Jake Lamb continues to get starts. I know the D-backs don't have a designated hitter like, you know, Nelson Cruz or JD Martinez or guys like that who you know you're going to put in at DH every day because they hit the ball. Jake Lamb, in 15 at-bats this year, he has one hit, one. I believe it was his first at-bat of the season in the first game in San Diego.
Yes,
he is hitting .067.
How many strikeouts does he have, though?
Oh, a lot.
How many strikeouts? A lot.
Yes. A lot.
I definitely don't know
he
what
can't
is
even
going
hit
on.
Righties anymore. It used to be he can't hit lefties, but now it's he can't hit right-handed batter or pitchers either. He can't hit anything.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever questioned Torey Lovullo this much before either?
No.
Because that's another thing I feel like. I feel like in the past I've been an advocate even at times for Torey Lovullo's method of managing. I think maybe because he does such a good job explaining it to us when we're doing our media scrums and stuff. I feel like other managers don't feel that that's as much of a necessity. Like they're going to manage how they manage and they don't really feel the need to explain themselves. But Torey will take the time to explain to us all the moves and why they made sense to him.
Yeah.
Even things that didn't work out. So you leave going, all right, well, actually that makes sense. It's kind of like leaving Bumgarner in there for that situation against Eric Hosmer.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Hosmer had terrible numbers against Bumgarner. Everything, he had terrible numbers, period. Everything made sense for him to stay in against Hosmer. So that was like one of those situations where even though it felt like a bad managing move because Bumgarner was already at 100 pitches and he had said he wasn't going to let them go over 100 pitches, it still made sense. Eventually, though, those like managerial moves start to crumble into something that you don't really recognize as being reasonable anymore. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've seen that, especially out of his, you know, usage of the bullpen. And the only question or the only explanation I can think of is that there are players who aren't available despite the team saying that they're on the roster or whatever. Like we have seen a suspicious lack of Yon Lopez this season.
Yep.
For somebody who was so good, so young, you know, so ready right now in the prime of his career to like shine. We have not seen him very much at all come out of the bullpen. I'm not up to date, so there could be some new information on him, but there's just things like that when it comes to, you know, like especially like Alex Young. We saw Young come out of the bullpen and be exactly what he was as a starter, yet we haven't really seen a lot of Alex Young, you know, so I really don't have a lot of answers for what's wrong with this team. I guess my answer is everything. Everything seems to be wrong.
Well, and along that point you were making, Christian Walker got a day off on the third game of the season.
Third game!
When he was actually hitting pretty well.
He was actually one of probably, I would say, two or three hitters at that point who were actually hitting
Ketel
well.
Ketel Marte, well, in the first
the
series.
The Martes were the other two.
Marte, the two Martes, and actually Cole Calhoun got off to a decent start, but he has really fizzled since then, too.
At least
Calhoun, though, has that he's shown a bunch of amazing defensive plays
sure.
in the outfield. It
sure.
makes you confident
has,
and happy.
He has value, there. Yes.
Even though he's struggling at the plate maybe at times, he's still, I think at one point, I don't know, does anybody else have a home run? Is he still the only Diamondback?
Ketel Marte homered last night,
okay.
A solo home run. So they've had two home runs in their game so far.
I go back to what Steve said was what his concern with this team was, and that star power thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I admit at the time I was trying to again, advocate for this team and say, like, yes, they do have stars. I don't know how you could say that. Now I see what Steve means, because by comparison to playing some of these teams that we've played, like the Padres and the Dodgers specifically, those two teams, it seemed like every batter was this incredible threat on their lineup. No matter what, it seemed like no matter what, either it was a guy that was fast and was going to figure out a way to get on base and be speedy, or it was just somebody with power that you had to be concerned with. The Diamondbacks don't have that in their lineup.
No.
I watched their lineup from almost trying to watch it from an outsider's perspective, and I wouldn't fear these hitters. You know, maybe Marte, you know, he'd be the guy I'd definitely be looking out for. But outside of that, I don't know who has it offensively for this team right now. It doesn't seem like anybody does.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I think that on paper, this is a good lineup, maybe one of the best that the Diamondbacks have had in the last decade, maybe. I'm thinking back to 2011 when they made the playoffs. But the thing is, you're right. None of them are proven. Even Ketel Marte, who hit 329 last year, was probably the second best hitter in terms of batting average other than Christian Yelich. And that's the other thing, too, by the way. Just because you have a star player doesn't mean that you're going to have success. Christian Yelich is 1-for-27 right now or something like that.
Yeah, he's struggling really bad. Right?
But what I was going to say about that, though, is you can sell me on the fact, maybe, that Torey Lovello is giving guys days off like he normally would every now and then to get other guys from the bench at bats and opportunities to get them going a little bit. But here's the thing for me. It doesn't feel like the Diamondbacks are putting their best team out there every single night. And I don't need to see the same lineup in the exact same order every single night to feel confident in them. But when a guy in Jake Lamb, and you guys know how I feel about Jake Lamb, I've been on this train for 2 years, the guy doesn't hit. And that's what he's known for, is as a hitter, because he sure as hell ain't a fielder. This guy has been hitting .208 for the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's righties, lefties, that's everything. Two straight seasons, .208.
And then when they call up Dalton Varsho yesterday.
Whom I like.
Yeah, I do too. He can play a bunch of different positions. He can catch, he can play the outfield and some infield, and he can probably, I'm sure, DH. He's got a good bat. But when you call him up, I'm like, okay, are they finally pulling the plug on Jake Lamb? Nope.
Nope.
They send Kevin Crone down to the alternate site, who got one game to prove himself. And
I was going
to
say.
And, you know, and then that night when they call up Varsho, Jake Lamb is still starting. Like, I don't understand what the love affair is with Jake Lamb. Are they really trying that hard to you know, give him every chance to prove that he can still hit the ball so they can trade him away? I don't even, when I watched Jake Lamb hit, I don't know why he was given a contract this year. They could have non-tendered him and been done with him.
I can't agree with you more, Bear, about that. And I mean, it's things like that that make me, again, wonder about what we're not being told at times about the roster, about injuries. Christian Walker, I was the one that pointed out on the day in a very suspicious email where I was, you know, twirling my mustache while doing it, asking why Christian Walker was getting a day off 3 games into the season. And then I had people then arguing with me and telling me, oh, you think the manager's going to tell you guys everything? That was my point. That was my point. Yes, no, I don't think he's telling us everything. And I don't think everything is fine. I don't think Christian Walker was being given time off just to sit for rest 3 days into the season.
He was dealing with that groin injury.
Right. But, and I don't know anymore, because it doesn't feel like everything is on the up and up any longer. Right.
Yeah.
I feel like MLB is doing everything they can. And I think Lovello and Mike Hazen have both shown us in the past that until a player is ready to like identify that they're out due to COVID, you know, related, diagnosis or concerns or whatever, that they're not going to be the first to do it, right? So like, that's why when sometimes they kind of give us these half answers, I don't know if they're being truthful or if there's some other situation going on, right? I think in the past they've kind of had to be a little bit more honest or stick a little bit more towards what they were saying. But even then, they could have said what they could say a guy's injured or not. They could say they're giving a guy a time off when he really isn't feeling really well or whatever. They can do whatever they want. It's just I think the point Steve made of them not putting their best team out on the field every night, that's the part that makes me that raises concern for me. And it feels at times like Lavolo's managing, either Lavolo's managing is kind of catching up to him here and he's outthinking himself, or there's something else going on.
Well, in a 60 game season, this is a sprint. We all called it a week ago. We called it a dead sprint for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And especially in a year where they're going to expand playoffs to 16 teams, like Derek pointed out that he doesn't think that they're trending towards one of those spots. Well, I would tend to agree if they continued to play the way they have and if they continue to manage the way they have, because I get that those players on the bench, like Ildemaro Vargas or Tim LeCastro, I get that they're not going to turn it on if they're not given the opportunity for consistent at-bats. I get that. But in a 60-game season where their job is literally 2 months long this year.
Yep, yep.
They should be able to play every day.
And you have every opportunity now with the expanded playoffs to make the postseason. It's your path. Is you have to finish in second place in your division, and then if you don't do that, have one of the best records for the remaining spots. And like Derek was saying, it feels like I haven't ever questioned Torey Lovullo more. And I don't want to, because I think Torey Lovullo is really smart. I feel stupid for almost questioning him because I know he is a smart guy. But to me, in these first couple series, he is managing this team like it's a 162 game season, and they're in July of a 162 game season where, you know what, Starling Marte does need a day off because he's played this many games in a row. Christian Walker does need a day off because he's played 3 out of 4 of this series, and he should get this day off. It's a 60 game season,
though,
dude. Like, now you've dropped a series to the Padres and you split one in Texas, and we're acting like you're done, because that's the reality. They have 53 games left, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that math, but
yeah, you're correct. And you can definitely subtract 7 from 60.
I've seen people out there say, chill out, man, chill out. You know, chill out, and it's fine. It's just 7 games. I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I wish I wasn't.
And you know, if they were showing any signs of life right now, I would be chilling out a little bit more. But I haven't seen anything besides Merrill Kelly that has shown any sign that they're going to be a good baseball team this year. David Peralta is struggling. Cole Calhoun is struggling. Eduardo Escobar looks like he doesn't even know what's happening at the plate. He's too busy adjusting his ski mask. I was texting you guys this in San Diego.
Oh,
When they were in San Diego, Eduardo Escobar came up in the first inning and he had his mask on over his nose and his face and everything. I'm like, okay, fine. The next at bat, he had it only over his mouth. The next at bat, it was on his chin only. And then he had it around his neck and he had it fully on in the field. And you know, I'm trying not to be that person that's complaining about a guy who's concerned about COVID-19 right now. I understand that it's serious, it's real, but I think that's where his mind is, and it's not at the plate right now.
And well, there was a play that he missed in the field that it made me wonder if he would have made it if he wasn't masked.
And I'm trying to be sensitive to that, because these guys, a lot of them are probably still scared, especially now with all the stuff going on with the Marlins. And then today, 2 St. Louis Cardinals players tested positive, and there has been a game canceled. So I'm sure there are, you know, guys that are concerned right now still. But and he just watching his at-bats, he is swinging at everything.
His mask situation is a metaphor for Torey Lovullo trying to figure out what's wrong with this team. Right.
I'm going to put it up here. Okay. I'm not going to put it up here anymore. I'm going to try this.
Yet the only thing that Torey keeps doing is putting Jake Lamb in the lineup. That's the part I think that confounds me the most, going back to his struggles, going back to just how other people have struggled. It's like, fine, but can we maybe give Christian Walker, our gold glove first baseman, a turn at first, and then like maybe give Kevin Crone 2 games at DH before sending him down? Some of the things just feel pretty drastic. I understand going for Dalton Varsho. He was my guy that I thought was going to really get an opportunity out of this crazy season. I think his versatility is the reason why Lovullo is going there. Plus, at this point, you're just trying to find a bat that can bat. Maybe somebody that can be that spark plug for the rest of the team. I know Tim LeCastro is still doing that, but he doesn't get regular playing time. And I just think in this situation that there would be better, some better option other than, you know, sending someone who's consistently struggling out there like Jake. Mm-hmm.
Jake has played in 6 of the 7 games. I don't want to make it out to sound like he has been playing every single at-bat. He has gotten less at-bats than all the other starters. He's been pulled a couple of times late in games. But here's what I thought Jake Lamb's role was going to be this season. I thought he was going to be the occasional DH against left-handed or against right-handed pitching, and that he would get pulled when the relievers come in. And then I thought maybe he'd spell Christian Walker once every now and then at first base. I didn't realize he was going to be splitting time at first and that Kevin Cron would be the one getting tossed back and forth.
And part of that could have been because Christian Walker had that groin injury in late in the summer camp stage in the inter-squad games. So maybe he's not fully healed to play first base, and Jake Lamb's really the only other guy to play first base, but Kevin Cron can play first base.
I think we all thought that Kevin Cron was going to get a real legitimate shot to be the DH on this team this year, and it doesn't look like that's happening at all.
I don't know what the next move is. It'll be interesting to see today when the D-backs take on the Dodgers tonight. They are facing a right-handed pitcher in Tony Gonsolin, so it'll be interesting to see if Jake Lamb is still in the lineup.
We proposed a question about what would the team need to look like, especially after the first week or so, in order for them to be considered sellers instead of buyers. And guys, this is it. This is exactly the nightmare scenario, I think, even though I know
1 week of games,
Manfred doesn't want to use that statement for the COVID thing, but it's a nightmare scenario for the Diamondbacks. We're sitting 30 days from today to the trade deadline. Trade deadline for MLB is August 31st. I can't imagine them going another week of playing like this and having these results and thinking in any way, shape, or form that they're going to be buyers at the trade deadline.
You'd be 4-10 at that point, right?
Yeah.
Another week of this. If they're 4-10 and sitting, 3 weeks away from the trade deadline at that point, how are you supposed to feel? I would feel like that's a team that you got to go out and you got to either... I don't know what pieces you sell off, though, too, if you're the Diamondbacks. I haven't even thought about the possibility of them being
think
a seller.
You can, because...
Well, Robbie Ray is one of those pieces.
All the guys that they would trade away are not performing.
Yeah, I don't know what you'd get for Ray right now, the way he's playing. And this is so...
You'd get probably a low-level minor leaguer or two.
This is so messed up, because Robbie Ray, a week ago, we were talking about how Robbie Ray could be the ace of the club because of the way he was pitching in summer camp. And I thought that summer camp numbers would transition better to the regular season than spring, because in spring, you work on stuff. You do the same thing over and over and over. That's all you care about. And you ramp up to the season. We didn't have that opportunity this year. This was summer camp was let's get going. It's no ramp up. It's 0-60.
Yeah.
Literally.
I now feel stupid for looking at Robbie Ray and saying this guy's going to be great this year because based off games he was pitching against his teammates.
This team makes us look so stupid all the time.
I feel so dumb. Like he was, and also what happened? I'll say this minus the results. What happened to the 96 mile an hour fastball we were seeing in the inter squad games? He was at 9. Like I know 93 is still pretty hard for a fastball, maybe not so nowadays because like guys are hitting 100 consistently, but like where did the 96 go? I only saw it maybe once last night against the Dodgers, and it was maybe 95. He was 93-94, and I don't know where I don't know if he's just not convicted in his pitches right now. It doesn't look like it by the way he's walking guys. Seems like he has a 3-ball count every single batter. But it's just, I don't know what happened between how can you look so great and confident against your teammates, and then when another team rolls in a different uniform, you look completely different. I don't understand.
Let me ask this, because I do think Carson Kelly's been doing an outstanding job behind the plate.
Yeah.
But I don't know how good of a job he's been doing at calling games, at framing pitches. I don't know how good of a job he's doing in the
It's hard to frame Robbie Ray's pitches.
Well, I mean, yes, these pitchers have been... have it's on them. I'm not going to sit here and blame Carson Kelly.
Sure.
It just makes me wonder if Dalton Varsho's purpose, if the reason they called him up might be to be behind the plate. We always talk about Dalton Varsho and his versatility and doing everything else that he does well. But the thing that he does is catch. That's his primary position. So I wonder if at this point they might even be giving him a shot behind the plate. That would seem to me like literally the acts of a desperate man, because you're talking about a catcher who's going to come up who has formed no relationship at all with these pitchers the way that Carson Kelly has.
Right.
And he has no time in the majors, so he's not going to be experienced.
He's never even played in AAA.
Right. He's not going to be experienced to like take that lead and do that thing.
That's why I doubt they're going to put him behind the plate. I think he's going to be a DH or an outfielder.
I'm throwing my own stupid question out there, and then I'm also like putting all the evidence behind why it wouldn't happen. But I think that I'm just interested to see what happens.
Yeah.
Because we could talk about it all day long. I think we've tried to be pretty positive in this show's history about this team, even when things looked really bleak and terrible. The reason why is because it would be great to sit around and talk about this team and how awful it is. But man, that's not fun to me. I don't think that. Even in sports, which you should be objective and you should always just try and to promote, the facts. I think it's hard to sit there and consistently think that this team was going to be bad. However, had I been in the corner of them being bad, I still wouldn't have thought they were going to be this bad.
Right. They're the worst team in baseball.
Well, and they faced
They're really close. They're close to being the worst team in baseball.
The Padres look great, and they credit should be given where credit is due. The Padres look like against all – I mean, they've played the Giants, sure, and they played the Diamondbacks. It's not like they've had a bunch of top-tier talent, but the Padres seem to be that team that even when the chips were down like they were last night, they found a way to win, right? There's something special about that team, and I don't think us losing 3 to 4 of them should reflect as badly on the Diamondbacks as reflect as good as the Padres possibly are. If that's the case, then the Diamondbacks are doomed, because the Padres are a young team that are going to be around and be good like that for a number of years, and they're only going to get better. And the Dodgers are kind of the same thing. Like, they're already outstanding, but they're young, and they're only going to get better. At this point, I can't believe how quickly things have turned very, very negative about the Diamondbacks and their future.
Barry, you touched on the velocity issues with Robbie Ray, something that, quite frankly, is a storyline every year here in Arizona because of Zach Greinke.
I'm so tired of talking about pitchers' velocity.
Yeah, well,
come on.
As they get older, that's what happens, I suppose. But is that what's happening, too, with Madison Bumgarner right now?
Yes. In his first two starts, I'm reading a tweet from Sarah Langs, and in his first two starts, Madison Bumgarner is averaging on his four-seam fastball a velocity of 87.9 miles per hour, which is his career low.
87?
His career low.
I drove faster than that to the Grand Canyon.
what was it before?
I read somewhere that last year, I think it's Steve Gilbert that tweeted this out, that last year on opening day, Madison Bumgarner was averaging about 91 miles per hour on his fastball.
That's a big difference.
3 miles per hour.
Three or four, yeah.
On opening day this year, he was consistently at 88 to 89. And then now seeing this stat here, 87.9 miles per hour. And what's even more concerning about that, guys, is when he met the media after his start in Texas, he said he doesn't know why his velocity's down. He says he feels good. He feels good right now. He's frustrated because he doesn't feel like he can blow his fastball by guys anymore. Or at least right now. And, I mean, it could be a plethora of reasons why his velocity's down. The whole, they shut down spring training, and who knows how aggressively he was throwing during their time off. And
right. And
they had an aggressive only 2-week ramp up to the season where he had to start on opening day. And the game against Texas was probably just his second competitive baseball game. I'm not going to count the inter-squad games anymore because those are just lies to me. And this is his second competitive baseball game against another actual opponent in a year. So it could be that.
They're ramping up.
He's also getting older. He's what? How old is Madison Bumgarner? Does anybody know that?
Early 30s.
He's not very old. He's very early 30s.
I was going to say 30 or 31.
He is 30 years old. He's not that old.
No.
So I hope that this is just a result of the COVID-19 impact of the season where everything was shut down in spring training.
He just hasn't had the chance to ramp up.
He didn't get that ramp up. So hopefully in his next couple starts, we'll start seeing a higher velocity. But it's concerning to me that, because, you know, you hear guys that might have an excuse for why. Oh, it's just because the ramp up was too short. I haven't had enough time. He said, I don't know. Your guess is, his quote was, your guess is as good as mine on his velocity.
Let me jump in there real fast, Bear. First of all, when you talk about two competitive starts, it was also his second interview with the media since March, because he has not been available for any media post-game, post-workout, any post-game media availability. The media was actually asking Torey Lovullo about Bumgarner's refusal to basically appear in front of the media. He did then a few days later after that start in Texas, and that was the first time since March that he had came out. I don't put too much stock in him saying he doesn't know, because I felt like those answers were more the situation of an athlete not really wanting to meet with the media, giving brush off answers to just kind of move on, especially after a loss, right? I think Bumgarner is the kind of guy that is with a brand new team, and I think that has a lot to do with it. He was with the same team for so long that team knew him well. And his whole process, whatever he does, they were familiar with. They've been a part of it. He's probably communicated it to them, and they've been involved with whatever he needed to be prepared. For the Diamondbacks, I feel like the Diamondbacks treat players a little bit more like they're their own person. And we used to hear that with Greinke, when Greinke wouldn't be at spring training on time or whatever, and we would ask Lovullo or ask Hazen, and they just had this answer of like, yeah, he'll be ready, he'll get prepared, he knows what he's doing, you know.
Yeah.
It definitely had this accountability factor for Zach to be an adult and to get ready for the season on his own. We don't need him here. He can be throwing in a field somewhere with his kids or whatever. As long as he's getting ready, we don't really care. He's a seasoned veteran, and we don't need him like here under our learning tree during spring training the way we do, you know, younger players. I wouldn't be surprised if Bumgarner got that same treatment, and maybe that treatment wasn't the right treatment. Who knows? You know, maybe Bumgarner was, you know, coddled a little bit more by the Giants organization and took care of him, so, you know, they made sure, whereas the Diamondbacks may have just let him kind of do his own thing, might find some freedom in that, but it might not also be good for you as a pitcher. It really was a short ramp up to getting ready for the season. And I have a concern. My bigger concern is Robbie Ray. Bumgarner, that velocity thing, that's concerning. But Robbie Ray looking like a completely different guy once again, once he's actually facing live competition versus how he looked in summer camp. I don't even know anymore. I just throw my hands up with this entire team.
Well, here's the thing for me. You say he looks like a totally different person. He looks like a different person than he did in summer camp, but unfortunately, he looks like exactly the same person
same
we've seen
Robbie
over
Ray.
The last couple of years.
I think every D-backs pitcher needs to shave their heads, because the long flow is not working.
Yes.
Shave your heads.
Shave
Zach,
your heads.
Zach Gallen, Luke Weaver, Robbie Ray. Yep. Merrill Kelly can keep his because he performed. Madison Bumgarner, like, he used to have the longest hair ever, and now it's short, but whatever. Shave your head, too. I don't care.
Madison needs to buy dusters for the entire starting rotation. I want long leather coats, maybe cowboy hats. It might be excessive, but I think that it would invoke the badass spirit in them. They need to believe in themselves again, right? Like, they need a motivational speaker to come to the facility and give them a talk about grit.
Oh no, not grit.
No,
not
don't you
grit.
Dare, Bear. Don't you dare. Grit was mishandled by other
people. I'm having flashbacks.
What's Kirk Gibson up to these days?
Give it!
I don't
grit.
Care. He's the one that mishandled it. It doesn't mean that the grit isn't a real thing. Grit is real. Grit is pouring gasoline on our bonfire.
Well, and if you
when I say grit, I'm talking about resiliency, Steve. Not everything's going to be perfect, but we aren't scared. We go again, but better. When I say grit, I'm talking about passion. Not letting anything get in the way of our momentum of achieving our goals as a team.
Is that
Can I get in there? And maybe...
Is that it? Is that all you... that's it?
Well, talent is meaningless, Steve. Intelligence is meaningless. Energy, meaningless, Steve, without grit. You need grit to win and to be a champion. Now let's go. Let's go.
I feel like we're heading out of the tunnel for the third period in the Miracle on Ice or something.
Whatever you need. Whatever you need.
Whatever.
Grit and determination. I'll be there to get this team fired up on Sunday. I'm sure they won't let me talk to them. I'll so be you're shouting going, outside of their clubhouse door.
You're already losing your voice. So you are going to the game?
I am going to the game, yes.
What's that gonna be like covering? I mean, I know you've been to a you went to a summer camp game, I know.
I did.
What's that gonna be like
to go anymore?
And yet you're going.
Now I'm going to a game.
What's that gonna be like?
Games are different.
What's that gonna be like to be in the ballpark with, you know, pretty much nobody else there?
With teddy bears in left field now.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's already weird. That's why I like missing opening day for me. This was the first opening day I've missed in a number of years. And well, I've only missed a few since I've been covering the team. And, you know, without it being all of the pageantry, all the fans, everybody there, that packed stadium, that packed concourse, the fireworks, the whole bit. I mean, it's just a game. It's special sometimes because of all of that other stuff. I understand why they need to do the things they do, especially even for the team. Like, the team needs that, you know, crowd noise and piped in sounds and stuff like that, too, because it's weird to hit inside of a giant airport hangar. I don't know what to expect. I don't fear for, you know, my own health or anything like that. I don't think that the safety precautions that are in place, though, are good enough. I mean, look at who they're letting come in there. Me. Kidding me? That right there should tell you that the MLB's entire health plan is all out of whack. But I don't know, man. It's going to be weird. It's going to be at least cool to see an actual baseball game be played. I'm not as excited about this team's future as I was 7 days ago.
Well, and if you thought that there was any reason for them being so bad, maybe you thought that it was the schedule. Well, they've played a really competitive Padres team, and the Dodgers are really good. It doesn't exactly lighten up on the schedule for the next week or
nope.
so. Today, the Dodgers. Tomorrow, the Dodgers. It looks like they get 2 days off in a row. Is that right?
No, they have Sunday against the Dodgers, and then Monday against the Astros.
Oh, maybe I'm reading this wrong. But two against the Dodgers, three against the Astros. I mean,
they have Monday off. They have Monday off.
Yeah. What's today? The 31st?
Yes.
Yes.
So tomorrow's the 1st, and then they play the... Okay, whatever.
They have a four-game series against the Dodgers.
Yeah, okay. I'm not really sure what I'm missing here. Maybe it's Google that's all messed up.
Yes, Google stinks.
I only see three games against the Dodgers, but my point still stands. They're
the
playing against the Dodgers.
Against
it's
the Dodgers.
Worse than my point was. They're going to be playing the Dodgers and the Astros in the next
coming
week.
And then the
week.
Padres again.
Yeah, who whooped up on them last time. Yeah. So it's not exactly like they get a break in the action, so to speak, in this schedule.
Man, they don't play the San Francisco Giants until August 21st.
Well, they don't play the Mariners till September. They don't play the Angels for a while, and there's a lot of like teams out there that you're like, man, it'd be
they
nice to break
really,
up the monotony
really
right now.
Really tough schedule.
Yeah, they do, and they needed to get off to a hot start, and that is certainly not what they've accomplished in the first week. And I think to kind of echo Derek's point, I think this is the best way to wrap up the podcast is. None of us are ready to completely jump ship on the Diamondbacks yet because there is time to. Turn this around?
Not much.
But there's not a lot of leeway. There's not a lot of room to wiggle here. You have to figure it out, and you have to figure it out quickly.
And that's going to be on, well, first of all, the players. They need to flip the switch now. It's also going to be on Torey Lovello to make the right decisions. If he feels like a guy's switch isn't flipped on, that guy shouldn't be playing. And it's hard right now because it seems almost like every player on their team hasn't flipped the switch yet, so it's kind of hard to find a guy that is engaged and ready to go because there's so many. You can only fill so many spots in the lineup with backup guys, you know. So I don't know.
I have the answer, Bear.
Okay,
Torey needs to get tossed out of every single game.
Yeah, it worked. It worked
every single game.
Kevin Crone's not here anymore. Kevin Crone needs to lean into every pitch, and then Torey Lovello needs to go argue it and get kicked out. The end.
Don't even start with me. He didn't even lean into that pitch.
Oh,
they
I
didn't
know.
Let him get the hit by pitch because he didn't get out of the
Dude,
way of the pitch enough.
By
it was the
way,
most absurd hit by pitch non-call I've ever seen in baseball.
What's really pissing me off about this whole process they're doing with limiting travel, they've had the same umpiring crew in all three series so far. The Diamondbacks have those terrible umpires from the San Diego series that were calling everything a strike. That stupid umpire that said Kevin Crone didn't try to get out of the way. I mean, he didn't really try to get out of the way, but he didn't lean into the pitch. His elbow was out there. He's big. He has an elbow guard for a reason, because he gets hit a lot, you know. So, and the guy doesn't give him first base. Like, what are you doing? He got hit by the pitch.
Yeah.
Loser.
Not great.
Everything's going wrong for them. Even yeah, calls like that.
Yeah, man.
Everything. Everything is wrong with the world right now.
I mean, Calhoun last night makes a gold glove caliber great diving catch in right field. And then the next batter, AJ Pollock, the traitor. He hits a 2-run home run when Robbie Ray looked like he was gonna get out of it the first inning with only giving up one run. And then he gives him a home run to AJ Pollock.
We don't say his name on this podcast.
He must not be named.
So there you go.
Traitor.
Tons of good things. Right?
Did I tell you guys that...
No, no good things. What good things?
There's oh,
no
right.
Did I tell
it's
you,
all bad, Steve.
Did I tell you guys that when they were playing the exhibition games against the Dodgers, I was watching that on TV, and my wife sits down, and he who must not be named came up to bat, and I just hear her go. She looked up at the TV, and she goes, "Traitor." And I'm like, I married a good woman.
You trained her well.
I married a keeper.
She didn't even need you to come up with that, though.
I know.
She knew.
God bless her.
God bless her. We need to get her on the podcast.
Yeah, no kidding.
That'd be a fun interview. We do appreciate you listening to the podcast, despite the doom and gloom of this week's episode. It's not really our fault, though, so I won't lay claim to that. But we do appreciate you listening, nonetheless, here at ArizonaSports.com. It is the Ain't No Fang podcast. I'm Steve Zinsmeister with Cody Fincher and Derek Montilla as well. We'll be back next week with more on the Ain't No Fang podcast.